Now back to The People Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
Hour number three of The People Show. You're listening on Sportsnet 650. If you're joining us on podcast, appreciate it. Now on Spotify, give us a follow. Leave a review. We do appreciate it. If you leave a super nice review or a really mean one, as long as it's five stars, we'll read it. Whatever it says in the review,
yes,
we'll read it.
Leave a five-star review, and we will be forced to read it. If it has any, you know, non-family-friendly words, we'll bleep them out. But yes, five-star reviews, please do, on Apple Podcasts, and we will read them on air.
For instance, if you give us a five-star review, but your comment is, Dan Riccio's breaking news sucks, that's okay, we'll read it.
And honestly, I think if we get enough of these, we might be able to talk to our station and see if we can reward the people that give us five-star reviews.
Yeah, that would be a pretty good way of doing it. Any kind of reward would be nice. And just to like pull a page out of Randeep's book from yesterday with the Blundstones thing, when he was like looking for any which text that may have been in support of his argument.
Lies.
Joe in Smithers.
Smithers. That's a different context altogether.
I'm always hard on Dan, but he's right. Anything Canucks is breaking, or should at the very least supersede any other sport. That's Joe in Smithers.
Joe is totally right. Anything Canucks is breaking right now.
It's breaking news.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Including Travis Hamonic being loaned back to the Abbotsford Canucks. So, was it yesterday that he was recalled, and now he is being sent back down?
Yeah.
Now, Travis Green mentioned that Travis Hamonic was sick going back to prior to the Montreal game when we thought he was going to be eligible to rejoin the club. Obviously, he wasn't ready for that. So is that what is a part of this? Is Travis is still not back to 100%?
Yeah, I think that's the word I'm getting from the club, that this is all related to Travis Hamonic not being up to speed and the coach not wanting to change his lineup. And they feel like Hamonic still needs to skate a bit more after being sick with the flu. And that's the reason why they're making this move. And paper-wise, this gives them a little bit of cap relief for a few days and how they do things. So they see value in sending him down to Abbotsford to make this move. I know people are asking if this means the Canucks are picking somebody up off waivers. I don't believe so. I can't say for sure if that's the case or not. Sometimes the team will be coy with things like that, and then we'll see ultimately if they get that waiver claim through, if they actually win the bid, depending on, you know, the waiver priority. But right now, the word from the team is this is not related to any incoming moves or anything else. It's simply a coach's decision. So we will see.
And the one name that we've had in the text box today is Cale Clegg, because the LA Kings did waive him. So I understand there's a need with the Canucks, especially on that left-hand side as well, because you are having players that maybe should not be featuring on the left-hand side. But based on what we've seen, what we've heard, doesn't seem like anything of that. But I guess we'll find out tomorrow for sure.
So there's the latest on the reasoning behind Travis Hamonic being loaned back to the Abbotsford Canucks. All right. It is The People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. We often use it as a joke when, you know, a bad football team will make a move and you're just like, man, why are they doing this? This is it. Bad teams stay bad. You know, it's often been used to make fun of the New York Jets in recent years, the New York Giants, maybe the Raiders at different points. Bad teams stay bad because they continuously make the same mistakes. They'll overspend in free agency at not premium positions for maybe older players that you're not going to get the best out of? Are you paying for, you know, past performance rather than future performance? But it applies to all sports, and it's one that I think the Canucks find themselves as part of one of these teams that haven't been able to get themselves up out of the mud consistently since the Sedin, the prime Sedin years came to an end. And that correlates with Jim Benning taking over as general manager. But what is it about, you know, in a world, in a North American sports landscape that is set up for parity, that is set up for everybody to go through cycles and have success, why isn't that the case? Why do bad teams stay bad?
Because they misjudge where they are in their cycle when they make moves.
Is that the biggest reason for
That's
you?
The biggest reason. Because if you jump the shark, you do it too soon, right? And it doesn't really happen where teams wait too late, because too late would mean that you're a good team and that you don't put them over the top ever, right? But it's like, at least you're a good team at that point. It's misjudging where you are in your cycle. And when you do that by being overly aggressive and then all of a sudden burdening yourself with contracts that are full of big money term and the players underperform, and also trading away assets for futures to get those players, that to me is the biggest reason why bad teams stay bad. They constantly misjudge where they are in their cycle when they make moves.
Yeah, there's the idea that, you know, when you make a move and you feel like you've turned the corner, you kind of jump the gun at times, right? And the Canucks and their experience is Narnia, which is what we're calling it, not the bubble, because it feels like it was a fantasy world at that point in time. You think you've turned the corner, but ideally, you're looking for that moment. And, you know, the Canucks are not the only team. When you talk about bad teams staying bad, let's go back to a team that made a very similar mistake. The Ottawa Senators, after they took the Pittsburgh Penguins to Game 7, thought they'd made it. Mm-hmm. They went all in on Matt Duchene in 2017, basically a year after that run. They said, okay, this is it. We're ready. This is the missing piece that we need. And therefore, they made a bad deal. They made a deal with the devil up until a couple of years ago that was still burning them. So it's not only the Canucks, but that's an assessment of having the self-awareness to say, okay, how did we get to the playoffs? How did we have success in the bubble? And is that real? And now looking back at it, I know it's easy with hindsight because we were all at that point saying, all right, this team has taken some steps. But the organization has to look in the mirror and say, all right, that year's success, was it because the team was a really good team from top to bottom? Or were there a couple of things that worked so well that made us from being an average team to a pretty good team? And was that sustainable? Jacob Markstrom, we talked about it a lot, guys. 11 stolen games that year. There's a reason he was in Vezina discussion up until that point. And sometimes you got to take that step back. It's a tough process, right? You know, self-awareness and being really, really, you know, critical of yourself is tough. But organizations that are good, they do it well. And that's why I think Vancouver is not the only one. There are some other ones that maybe used it as confirmation bias to say, all right, we're ready. In actuality, maybe you're not.
You can't chase wins. It should smack you in the face when you realize you're good enough, you know? Like, it shouldn't be that much of a debate. You should just kind of know.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is, though? Oftentimes, the teams that are also bad, you look at the ownership, too, and a lack of patience from them oftentimes, or, you know, them thinking they know the answers to it. And oftentimes what happens with ownership is they've all been very successful in their business ventures.
Yeah.
But sports, man, it is tough. Even
sports is different, man.
It's different. And even people with expertise get it wrong a lot. Like, we talk about draft picks. We talk about success. Nobody hits on 50% of their draft picks. Like, we're talking about less than 50% of your draft picks. We're talking about, can you get 2 to 3 players out of a draft, right? Like, that's what you're talking about, really. And even on acquisitions and trades and free agent signings, the best teams make mistakes. It's not easy to do. So if you have somebody in charge or somebody that feels like they should be a bigger part of the decision-making because they think they've made good decisions and they've had success in their life and they try to apply those same lessons to team building, and that can oftentimes blow up in your face as well, right? So it all starts from top down. I find the organizations that are always the best run are the ones that have a real good relationship with ownership, understanding what they need in place, how they give their influence, but also stay off so that team can have success, and then building it out so you are completely, like Randy mentioned, honest where you are as a team, and that you don't believe in magic beans all the time.
Yeah. And look, that's something that has definitely plagued Vancouver to a certain extent. You know, this even when they rebuilt, technically, it was a rebuild by accident, right? They were trying to keep winning. They were trying to keep the window open through the final years of Henrik and Daniel Sedin's career. It obviously fell apart, and they ended up in the basement of the league anyhow. So that is a big factor as well. You can't chase wins. Like, that's wins. You have to build towards wins. And when you chase wins, when you chase a playoff appearance, more often than not, you're going to make mistakes, or you're not going to have enough of a foundation to sustain a year of success. You'll have up and down seasons. There won't be, like, the way to win a championship is you knock on the door long enough and eventually you get the bounces. You get the right calls in the right moments. You don't have a terrible injury to one of your key players at the worst time. Now, those are all things that are essentially out of every team's control. But you look at Tampa, you knock on the door long enough, you'll eventually get there. The Washington Capitals, yep. You knock on the door long enough, you'll eventually get there.
It's funny, the narrative on Tampa Bay is now that they're back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, that they're one of the elite franchises. But going back a decade and a half, when Len Barry was in charge, they were far from that. They were an organization that was seen in disarray. We talked to Shane O'Brien, who was a part of that organization. He tells you what they were. But what happens, to your point, Reach, you are in the conversation, you have your disappointments, you are making moves at advantageous times, right? When a market hasn't won a Stanley Cup and they've been in the NHL for 50 plus years, there's an element of desperation of, it's got to happen. We've been waiting for it for so long, but you can't let that desperation rule the day. There's a want, there's a need, there's a love for a championship team in this market, but you also have to be realistic of what you are. Washington was a classic example. There was a time before their cup win, guys, that they were saying, is Alexander Ovechkin going to waste away in Washington without a cup win? Like, that was an actual conversation.
Yeah, they were even I don't know how much they pondered trading him, but
the hockey world did.
Definitely a discussion for a lot of years.
So, like, there's an element of you still have to think of the long game, and that's challenging, especially in a market like Vancouver, which, you know, we want a winner now because this market's been lacking it. But
it's not
that's
even about,
a tricky thing, man.
Yeah, but it's not even about being a cup contender right away, man. Like, they've had one season
games.
Over the past eight years, right? One season where they were a 100-point team.
Yep.
And one year, they won a play-in to make the playoffs.
Yep.
That's it. Those are your two peaks. You had one peak as a 100-point team. And a 100-point team in and of itself doesn't mean you're a cup contender.
And
right?
Both have proven to be a mirage more than anything else.
More than anything else, right? At least that's what we've seen since that point for both of those appearances. It's not even about... Yeah, the goal should always be to win a Stanley Cup. And I get what you're saying about the Capitals comparison, but the Capitals made the playoffs every year. They had good regular seasons,
yeah,
right?
They won the President's Trophy in his tenure as
they knocked on the door long enough, and they eventually got through.
You're not in the same conversation as those teams.
Nope.
You're not even in the conversation of being a team that's making the playoffs every year, but just can't get over the hump of winning one round, or they can't win the second round. God, I wish we were having conversations about this team losing in the first round and not being able to get past the second round for a few years. That was a conversation around the West Coast Express team, right? But you first get to a point where you're a consistent playoff team, and then you start building towards being a cup contender, right? So I understand, you know, we want a Stanley Cup in Vancouver, but you got to get to the point
you
where
you got to look in the mirror, right?
Yeah, you do, and you got to get to the point where you're consistently making the playoffs year in and year out, and then gradually get better.
And a part of that conversation is when we talk about two of the best teams that we've seen in the last decade with Tampa and Washington, what they were able to do, years before they actually did the job, their star players were performing at a high level and winning things, even individually. Like, there was consistency there. Vancouver needs that first. So as much as I look at the organizational outlook, when you're looking at this team, you got to say, all right, individuals got to perform at a high level as well. And that hasn't happened this year. So when you're making that assessment of where your team's at, that's a part of it, guys, right? Washington, even when they had those first round failures, second round failures, they still, during the regular season, Backstrom and Ovi were tearing it up.
Yeah.
Canucks have to get to that point where their core can drive them. Quinn Hughes is doing that. He's on pace for, 80 points, 70 plus? Elias Pettersson, MIA. That is the long game here. In the next couple of years, hopefully this year and next year, can you get back and can you build that consistency? And then we can talk playoffs.
It can... A lot of it does come back to initially what Sat mentioned. That's understanding your window. It's different for every team. Like, you look at every successful team. You know, the Raptors and Masai Ujiri had a unique understanding of his market, his team. There's no way I'm going to lure a big-time free agent here. It's never really happened for the Raptors. It's not going to happen. So he went out and made the trade for Kawhi Leonard. But he knew he had a pretty good team, and he added Kawhi Leonard to it. Now you've got a championship contender. Took a big move to trade away DeMar DeRozan in that deal, a franchise legend, but that was the only way the Raptors were ever going to get over the top. And they're trying to find their way ever since because they don't have that guy anymore. It's not just about tanking either, because you can tank and have bad asset management, not make the right decisions on when you start building. Again, maybe pushing your chips in a little bit too early before your team is ready to really make that step, and it can all come crumbling down. We saw that with Edmonton. We've seen that with Buffalo. You've seen it in the NBA. You see it in Major League Baseball. The Dolphins, they thought they were ready to come out of it, and they're still a middling team even after the treasure chest of draft picks Greer assembled through their rebuilding years, right? Like, it's different for every... Boston hasn't had to rebuild to go back to the Stanley Cup final a couple of times in the last few years. It's different across the board. There isn't one blueprint that works, but it's about understanding windows, understanding your roster, and what it takes, what it will take for your organization to win, how the world works for you, how the system works for you. The Tampa Bay Rays are a perfect example of that. Knowing when to move off players, what players work for them, and knowing baseball CBA, how to exploit it to get the extra 2%. But it comes back around to asset management and a unique understanding of when your windows are right to pounce and when to make those moves.
Okay, let me ask you this. What is Vancouver's and what is the Canucks' competitive advantage? Is it, you know, when we talk about Tampa, they do kind of have the smartest guys in the room feel. They obviously have some tax benefits on their side too, which players can, you know, that's a competitive advantage. What is Vancouver's? What is a part of that selling point if you are trying to get somebody in your organization, if you're trying to lure? Is it essentially saying, hey, we're in it to win it every single year? Because that to me is not a competitive advantage. That's ambition. But do you have a plan around that ambition? Tampa actually has a competitive advantage. You talk about the New England Patriots. They have a competitive advantage. His name is Bill Belichick and the way that organization is run from top to bottom. So what is the Canucks' competitive advantage? Do they have one?
Yeah, I mean, but those teams are like...
institutions.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? And
but you should still have ambitions to become one of those,
right? I understand. But man, this team is so far away from even being in the conversation of that. Like, to me, that's like... But, you know, I mean, it's like they're not even crawling, and that's like studying astrophysics.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? They're not even there yet.
But that's my point, though. You got to start developing that.
I get
point.
It. No, I know. But
they had it for 1 4-year stretch, and they didn't build off of it.
No, and now you got to build it back up again, right? Yeah. You got to build all that stuff back up again. And listen, it's not an easy thing to do. I think it's really easy to say, and I love this text here from Terry in Mission. He says, it's so refreshing and comforting to know the media has all the answers. Who knew? I mean,
we have all the information.
We have all the information. But it's just about talking about the situation of how to win and how you lose and which teams have success. And the teams that are successful year in and year out, their foundation is pretty similar. They have alignment. They, you know, I'd love to have a conversation about building, you know, the super smart front office out and let's be super progressive or whatever. But sometimes it's as simple as having somebody who knows to put a program in place.
Yeah.
And then having a lineman top to down. And if you have a lineman and belief and you move in the same
teams
direction.
We talk about have that.
They have a lineman. Now, everything else, as far as competitive advantage and taking that next level and winning cups, I think that's stuff that you have to develop after you build an identity. What do those teams have? They have identity. And once you have an identity, you start building on top of that. What's the conversation we have this year about this club? What is their identity?
Yeah.
We don't know what it is, right? And I think one of the things that happened, when you go back to 2011, what kind of course has this team been on since they lost to the Bruins in the Cup Final?
Downhill.
Right. But the course they've tried to take is be tougher to play against,
yeah.
Right? This organization and this ownership has been chasing the ghosts of 2011 for a decade.
That
now.
Trauma hasn't left them.
It hasn't, right? So what do they do the next year? We got to be better defensively. These are things we do. Go out and get David Booth. That's something that happened. Now, that kind of blew up. What did ownership want? They wanted John Tortorella. You know, we want, ground and pound hockey in your face, you know, be tougher to play against, all this sort of stuff, right? But you still need skill. That didn't work out. You bring Willie Desjardins in. What did Jim Benning say? They hired him from the Boston Bruins organization. Meat and potatoes. Why did Jim say meat and potatoes? Because the owner went out and got somebody that's going to bring you meat and potatoes, right? They want to be tougher to play against. That never really happened, right? They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to rebuilding on the fly, trying to do all their things, right? And eventually they amass some skill, and they're like, okay, we got to lean into the skill a little bit. They do. And then what happens? They finally make the playoffs. They see what happens in the postseason. They play a bit better defensively, a bit grittier. They have some success. They say, this is the team we want to be. Forget the regular season when we're playing, you know, back and forth hockey and taking our chances. We want to be a tough team to play against. We want to be good defensively. And we're going to be a team that we weren't in 2011. Well, you haven't built that team out.
No.
Because you're chasing an identity this team doesn't have. And you haven't built the team in that shape. Yet, all we keep hearing is, we're better defensively. We're harder to play against. We want to be more structured. We got to be a team that is on our toes all the time, which is something that Travis mentions. And even if they make any changes, does the owner still want a run-and-gun team, or is he still going to be wanting to chase the ghost of 2011 and have a team that's hard to play against? Because I see a club that's stuck between identities, guys.
Yeah.
Because they sure as hell are not hard to play against, and they're not a tough physical hockey team, and their skill isn't shining either. So figure it out. That's the biggest thing you got to figure out. What are you going to be as a team? Because if this was your idea of being a harder team to play against, you have failed miserably.
The identity question is a major one. And when you're talking about, and this is where
shouldn't your identity come organically?
It should, but here's the problem also of the last 8 years or so. The identity and the team composition has been very reactionary at the same time, right? So when you talk about being a team that's tougher to play against, that's what Jim Benning said in his introductory press conference. Those were words he used, and that's why people have held on to them, because right from day one, that was something that was being stressed. It's kind of gone up and down. Like, we've heard about, you know, after St. Louis won the cup, yeah, you got to be bigger, you got to be stronger, you got to add some heft. And we saw other teams go with skill. Being bigger didn't matter. So, like, every year it feels like it moves 10 feet, 15 feet. And, like, hey, being reactionary is good, but that's to your point, Zat, identity. What are you? On year to year, it's just changing drastically. And the players you pick up offseason, do they really jive? Do they fit? Because once again, the word fit comes in with what you're trying to do now. Because you've shifted from what you were doing 2 years ago. Yeah. Or a year ago when you signed these players.
Lots of reaction coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Love to see it. Dane in Surrey, the positive media coverage. That's
an advantage.
I didn't plan for that phrase to turn into wrong answers only, but yeah. Apparently, according to the text inbox,
Blundstones are an advantage. Is a text that just came in.
It's one of the world's most beautiful cities. I think we just decided on a wrong answers only for today.
So not organizational superiority. We're talking
no.
about Blundstones.
No.
Coming up on the People's Show, Tim Booth, Seahawks reporter for the Associated Press. We'll get into our NFL preview for the weekend. That's next. Sports at 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Dan, Sat, and Randeep.
Yeah, it's the People's Show. Going to step away from hockey for a little bit. Appreciate your texts. Bad teams staying bad. It's a conversation that applies to all of the North American sports. The Seattle Seahawks...
It might apply to the Seahawks very soon, too.
Well, they've been a really good team for...
I said it might.
Like, pretty much a decade.
I said it might in the future. See how sensitive you are to your Seahawks? Not even listening to statements.
I know the bad team stay bad thing from being a Dolphins fan for many years.
Sad, he's so defensive right now. I said might in the future. So sensitive.
You're just so excited for somebody to, like, not be good.
9-win Seahawks? How's that coming along for you? Super Bowl contenders? How's that coming for you?
It definitely hasn't worked out this year.
Mm.
It was definitely a poor prediction on my part. Not going to lie. They get the Niners this week. Seahawks have been really bad. Russell Wilson's been really bad, and now they've signed Adrian Peterson. Tim Booth, Seahawks reporter for the Associated Press, is going to join us here in a few moments. Seahawks and Niners, NFC West matchup. Niners are making a push for the playoffs as this matchup comes onto the sked on Sunday in Seattle. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Tim Booth. Thanks for this, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for making time for us today. The question that surrounds the Seahawks continues to be Russell Wilson, and wondering why he hasn't been able to lift his game. What do you see is going on with Russ right now, and how can the Seahawks offense get, you know, somewhere close to on track, be at least average maybe for the rest of the season?
It feels like there's a major disconnect going on between what the offense was that Shane Waldron was going to bring in here when he got hired as the offensive coordinator in the offseason, and the offense that's being run right now. And it's kind of difficult to tell where the fault is. You know, it seems like there's opportunities in the passing game where Russell is just missing throws or missing guys that are open. There's also seems to be some play calling issues where it sure seems like they're not trying to take advantage of sort of those shorter and intermediate kind of level routes. And it seems to be either kind of boom or bust right now. It's either a short dump off pass or a wide receiver screen, or he's dropping back and trying to take a shot downfield. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly why he's been so off, why this offense is so kind of not even stuck in neutral, but stuck in reverse. And I think there's a lot of factors involved. I think that, you know, like I said, there's play calling issues. I think there's issues with Russell maybe not seeing the field as well as he has in the past. And you got to take into account his finger injury. I think, you know, kind of Pete Carroll made mention of it today that right now he's at the 8-week mark. And when that injury first happened and he first went in for surgery, that was kind of the tentative timeline that they had for him as being able to come back. It was closer to 8 weeks and not the 5 weeks that it ended up being before he got back on the field. So I think all of that put together and coupled with a really terrible run game right now and not having a guy like Chris Carson, I think you put all those pieces together and it makes Russell Wilson look kind of as mortal as he has, especially for the last 3 weeks, and has made this offense look as broken and dysfunctional as maybe it's ever been in his time with the Seahawks. So, and really there's no easy fix for it. And especially when you're playing a team like San Francisco and the kind of defense that they're going to bring in on Sunday.
You know, I find this to be very similar, not quite to the same degree, of course, because Brady had all the titles and the success with Belichick, but there was some talk towards the end, right, about how much of this is Belichick, how much of this is Brady. Is Brady kind of washed up now? Can he even be really good? And there is a question about Russell Wilson, that can he be a good quarterback if you don't have a good running game? And I just feel like, Tim, that we're going to have to see this situation unfold in a different market next season if he gets traded. And that year is going to really tell us about Russell Wilson as a quarterback, because I'm trying to figure out if he's actually taking a step back, if he's just trying to make big plays to have some flashy stats at the end of the season, try to find a different home. Do the Seahawks actually have the right philosophy in place? Like, I really think the real answer and truth about Russell Wilson, we may not find out until he goes somewhere else.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And those are all terrific questions that don't have simple answers to them right now as to what's the best direction going forward. And that's kind of the overriding thing, that this downturn this season, the struggles this season, has only amplified that conversation, because it certainly percolated last offseason when Russell said what he did. And as much as some have tried to make it out as that wasn't a big thing, it was a big thing. Everything Russell does in his life, it seems like, is very calculated and very thought out. And he spoke in the way that he did for a reason. That showed to me and to a lot of people that there is truly some friction between him and the organization about the direction of where they need to go to take full advantage of his skills as a quarterback. And to your point, we don't know what the answer is. We don't know whether it's a Russell Wilson issue or is it a Pete Carroll philosophy issue. And this offseason sure feels like, especially with the struggles this year, that there's going to be a resolution of some sort. And either we're going to see a change of the coach and a philosophy change in what's happening here, and something that's probably very directed toward what fits Russell Wilson's skills, if there is a change in terms of coaching and philosophy. Or, as you pointed out, we're going to see him in a different market, and he's going to be playing somewhere else for somebody else, and we're going to get a true feel for what made him so successful in Seattle. And was it the system? Was it everything else around him? Or was he truly that great when he was in Seattle? So, again, there's no simple answer to it, but I think you're right. I think we're heading toward a pinnacle moment where that decision is going to be made one way or the other, and we're going to get true answers after that as to where the franchise goes and where he is as where we view him as a quarterback.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Tim Booth of the Associated Press. And Tim, when you are 3-8, the blame game is going to happen. Some folks looking at Russell Wilson, others looking back at that Jamal Adams deal and the price the Seahawks paid. But also another major reason of why it hasn't worked is the draft picks over the years, Pete Carroll, Schneider, they haven't been able to hit on those high picks, and that depth is simply not there to provide support. How big of a part of that is this to this equation?
Oh, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. And if you go back even further than just the last couple of years, the amount of impact draft picks that they have unearthed and brought to Seattle is pretty minuscule. And in some ways, they're still living a little bit off of the draft that they had in 2010, 2011, 2012, which were 10 years ago now, which is kind of hard to think that it's been that long, but that's the way it is. But they're still living off of the Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner draft, or the Richard Sherman draft, where they also got Doug Baldwin as an undrafted free agent, or even their first draft together where they got Russell Okung and Earl Thomas both in the first round. Their track record over recent years has been abysmal. You know, outside of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, can you name an impact draft pick that they've made in recent years? I mean, it's really very minimal. But the best way for them to rebuild and to fill the holes that they have right now, which have helped lead to them being 3-8 right now, is through the draft. And then that circles all the way back to the question about Russell Wilson, because they have no piece that can get them the kind of draft capital that they need to truly replenish and rebuild this thing like their quarterback. They can trade their quarterback in this offseason. They can give themselves cap space. They can probably get two or three first-round picks and maybe a player out of that, and very quickly, I think, replenish the needs that they have to find in order to make this team as competitive as it needs to be a contender again. But then it goes back to that question. What's your decision? Is it the coach or is it the quarterback? And that's a question that ownership's going to have to answer. That's a question the front office is going to have to answer this offseason, because the holes that they have are so significant, and the lack of depth they have is so significant that they can't just replenish what they need through free agency. They've got to get some draft picks, and they've got to hit on those draft picks that they get.
Well, it's been a good team for a lot of years and a playoff team, but you know, I don't think a lot of the big moves they've made to try and push the team forward have all come up flat. I mean, Jamal Adams is just the latest in a long list. Like, you can think back to Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham. You know, there's been a lot of moves where they're saying we got to do something to get another step further, but it's just it's not gone the way that they had hoped, and that's led them to this place where they've just kind of been stuck in neutral for so long, and now eventually the bottom has dropped out as it would have eventually, no matter what.
They've been, like you said, they've been chasing that piece to push them over the top. And, you know, you think back to Percy Harvin, you look at the rest of that roster was, I mean, he was injured a whole ton of that season, that 2013 season. That roster was good enough to win a Super Bowl title without Percy Harvin. They didn't have to make that move in order to be, you know, the best team in football. But the Jimmy Graham move, the Jamal Adams move, they were all moves that they felt like were the ones to take that piece and push them over the top. And you're right. You make too many of those, and they don't push you over the top, and they don't cover up the glaring holes that you have in other places with your roster construction. You end up in a situation like you are right now, which is why I think, you know, I have no feel for what they're going to do this offseason. I would just be guessing. To me, it makes more sense to try and move the quarterback and replenish what you need through the draft and whatever. But whatever they do, you know, I don't see them. I think maybe they've learned their lesson. I think they've maybe finally understood that when they build things out going forward, they have to do it from sort of a foundationally and not the big one or two pieces that they feel like are going to put them over the top. Yeah, they might have the ability to do that in free agency in the future, but in the short term, they've got to rebuild their foundation. And going out and getting one or big two splashy free agents, you know, or trading for a big player probably isn't going to do that any time in the short term. And I think maybe this year has, I don't think it's opened their eyes to it, but maybe solidified that, hey, that's the direction that they have to go if they want to get back to being a competitive team that's contending for titles and not just a team that can get into the playoffs.
Well, the thing I find so interesting, too, is that Pete Carroll, and listen, for somebody who's 70 years old, he is as alert and feisty and on top of it as anybody can be. But, hey, I mean, life's finite as it is, and when you get to that age, it becomes even more finite, right? So how many years does he have, even though he's under contract for a while, to really build out another team? And when you go, and like you mentioned, you go through all the players they have and the lack of talent, and maybe their most talented player is a punter in Michael Dickson. And I'm not saying he's the most important player, but isn't that true? Like, their most talented player at his position right now is a punter. And if that's a situation, like, how much runway do you have with Pete, even if you trade Russ?
Exactly. And right. And that goes back completely to the decision about which way does ownership want to go. Do they want to build around the quarterback, or do they want to give Pete one more chance to put this together? If you give Pete and general manager John Schneider one more chance to put this together, you know, okay, they've got DK Metcalf. They've got Tyler Lockett. They've got to find a running back. They've got to find an offensive line. They have some nice pieces on defense. They're probably going to have to replace Bobby Wagner, but, you know, Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs are pretty good centers. They have the best punter in the league, you could argue, in Michael Dickson. You could see sort of some of the pieces that they can work with. If they wanted to go the route of saying, hey, let's get as many draft picks as we can, let's move Russell, let's see if we can make this instead of a 3 to 4 year sort of rebuild, if you bring in a new coach and a new system and have to put the pieces into that work around Russell. If we trade Russell and get the picks for him, maybe we can turn this around in 2 years. Maybe we can find lightning in the bottle again and find a quarterback somewhere in the draft that in his first and second year is absolutely tremendous, and we found the second, you know, the second version of Russell Wilson, or the new generation's version of Russell Wilson. Let's see if we can put together an elite defense again. If you have enough picks and you don't have to hit on so many of them, then maybe you can sort of flood the field and see how many you can get that actually work for you, and have a draft where they have 12 picks. You know, they haven't had a huge allotment of draft picks in several years. And obviously this year they don't have a first-round pick to be able to use when, you know, they would have a top 10 pick as it stands right now, or a top 5 pick. That's the ultimate question, is how much longer does Pete want to do it? Does ownership want to give him the chance at one more shot at a title? And if they do they move Russell to get the picks to try and turn this around in 2 years rather than be a longer rebuild? And if they're looking at a longer rebuild, then you're probably looking at a change in your coaching in your coach going into next year.
Tim, it's fascinating days ahead for the Seattle Seahawks. Thanks for this today.
Yep, no problem, guys. Have a good evening.
There is Tim Booth, Seahawks reporter for the Associated Press. Not looking good right now for the Seattle Seahawks.
We got this text. Seahawks in the same situation as the Canucks pre-Benning. Rebuild or retool? Hopefully they rebuild.
I mean, rebuilding is scary in the NFL.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know. I mean, see, in the NFL, I mean, I'm with you as if you have a quarterback who's good, but Russ may want out. Yeah. Russ, I mean, the bigger thing is, as much as, yeah.
Guys,
you know,
last offseason, he kind of made it, like, it was
pretty clear.
It was passive, but a message was sent.
Yeah, so.
I would say Aaron Rodgers had been that way with the Packers, like, well before last season, too. Like, Rodgers had some poor seasons and also, yeah. like, was mixed in, like, maybe I don't want to be here. So, and, you know, they figured it out. They've had some really good teams. They put it back together. It's always been acrimonious, it feels like, but, you know, they've found a way to still be one of the best teams in the NFC during that time. So I'm not going to write it off until the day is actually, you know, you actually see the notification come up and Russell Wilson has been traded from the Seattle Seahawks. It's obviously a real worry, but it hasn't happened yet. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I don't
he's
know,
panicking.
Man.
He is so panicking.
I don't know, man.
He's panicking.
I've been banging the drums of don't trade Russ, figure it out. If you got to get rid of Pete, do that. But if he doesn't want to stay, what are you going to do, right? You can't force it. And it seems like he's got one foot out the door, right? So I think you kind of have to. You kind of have to do a bit of a rebuild now.
If they're trading this version of Russ, then fine, go ahead. But
yeah, but replacing a Russell Wilson, like, in your previous iteration of fandom, Miami Dolphins still haven't really figured out who's replacing Dan Marino, right? Like, yeah. You're a Browns fan, Sat. Finding a quarterback is tough. Even if you find a, you know, above average one, moving off them is a difficult situation because you never know when you're going to find another above average or good quarterback.
But the one thing that Pete does, and I know people will scream at it, he knows how to build a program though, right? And if you start afresh a little bit, you can probably get one more run at it. You can probably do a 4-year plan here to see what you can do. But I mean,
you got to get Russ back on board.
Yeah, I don't think. No, I mean, like, getting rid of Russ, you can do a 4-year thing without Russ. You can't get Russ back on board. I think it's done. I think it's too far gone.
I think Pete Carroll, like, a 4-year build with a 72-year-old coach or a 71-year-old coach, whatever.
70,
it is.
Yeah.
A four year build without a first round pick for this year. Like, maybe you get one back with Russ.
That's the thing.
But how high is it going to be? Where is it going to be in the draft? Is this the best quarterback class? I mean,
okay, even if they had one, though.
Yeah.
How much faith do you have in Schneider and Pete getting it right?
Yeah.
That's a big part of this equation. They haven't.
Well, they've done, though. I agree that they've made some mistakes, but what have they done? They've been all in on a superstar quarterback. That's what you're supposed to do. They've made some mistakes with that, but the philosophy of, we got a star quarterback, we're trying to win again.
It's like the Penguins with Crosby and Malkin. Like, right? We're going for it every single year.
Exactly. And I don't begrudge them for doing so, but they've missed on a lot of draft picks. And ultimately, that's the thing. And the big trade they made, the Jamal Adams one, has been a disaster.
Disaster. It's a complete train wreck.
We got some unsigned text here. Belichick rebuilt in 2 years. Okay. Different situation. He is regarded as the greatest coach.
The best. But you can't, in the NFL, though, if you have a proper plan, if you accrue draft picks and stuff like that, you can, in theory, build it a bit sooner because guys coming into the NFL as rookies are more ready to play, right? So the window doesn't have to be as long as, say, in hockey when you view a rebuild because of how long it takes those prospects to emerge and start playing for you.
This football season, make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey, and theclaytonpub.com. So that's the Seahawks and 49ers. Big one this weekend, especially for the Niners. Elsewhere on the Week 13 sked, a get-right spot for the L.A. Rams. They've got the Jaguars and are 13-point favorites there. The two big matchups from a divisional perspective are the Ravens and Steelers. Ravens are 4.5-point favorites in Pittsburgh. And the Broncos are at the Chiefs. Chiefs have moved up to a 9.5-point favorite in that game. The Ravens have been able to find ways to win. And this feels like a spot where after the performance of Ben Roethlisberger last week against Cincinnati, you're wondering what left do the Steelers have? feels like a miracle that they're still 500. What are they, 5-5-1 this year? It feels like if Ben doesn't win this, this is kind of like his last big game of his career, pretty much.
It could be, right? But the reason they are at 500 and the reason why they are still a tough team to beat is because they're a really well-coached team.
Yep.
Right? And we have Tomlin, and the defense still can hold its own and still have some, you know, players, even on offense, like whether it's Harris or Deontay Johnson was an absolute marvel, right? I know people love Chase Claypool here, but Deontay Johnson is the man as far as receivers go on that Steelers team.
Claypool is a physical freak.
Yes.
And yep. Johnson is like, he's a crafty receiver.
Yeah, he's incredible. I love Deontay Johnson's game. So they have stuff there, but Ben's been so bad. If he was a little bit better, that team
would be really good.
A lot better than what they are right now. But because they're well coached, because they still have talent in all areas of the game, I still kind of wonder if we get thrown a curveball here in this AFC North matchup.
Yeah, there's potential there because you've got, 11 players on the Ravens squad that are questionable for this game, right?
Yep.
You have a pretty questionable game last week from them. They end up getting the job done, but still, it wasn't pretty. But that Steelers defense, which was last year the strong point of their team, and even at the beginning of this year, we're talking about how that defense is always going to be good. They haven't been good of late because they've been depleted. And news out today, Cam Hayward might not even play as well in the middle of that defense. You just wonder, is that too much to come back from? We talk about the uncertainty on the offensive side of things with Roethlisberger, but defensively, they're pretty banged up as well. So do they have the horses to run with the Ravens? I don't think they do. The Ravens got to clean it up, though. They've been pretty messy the last couple of weeks. They get the job done. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been pretty. I still think the Steelers, they just see like they're on the ropes right now. They're on the ropes and they're ready to get knocked out.
Final hour of the People's Show. When does your moral compass take over your love of sport? Seeing a lot of situations play out around the world right now. The WTA pulling out of China events amidst Peng Shuai concerns. F1 in Saudi Arabia this weekend. There's been some concerns there. Of course, the World Cup in Qatar coming next year. Canada may be returning to the Men's World Cup for the first time since 1986. But of course, major question marks about how all of those areas and those situations regard human rights. So we'll dive into that conversation coming up next on The People's Show.